Annenberg Radio News.
Almost like Nirvana. Compton is Nirvana.
We talked with a Stanford University professor about the city's history. Good afternoon from the University of Southern California, and welcome to Annenberg Radio News for Tuesday, April 26, 2011. I'm Sarah Erickson. City Controller Wendy Gruhl said today that the Department of Transportation is irresponsible in the way it handles certain parking violations. Mark Shore has the story.
City Controller Wendy Gruhl found that the city missed out on nearly $15 million in revenue this past year. The report that Gruhl's office issued showed the Department of Transportation failed to impound or put boots on three-quarters of vehicles with five or more unpaid parking tickets. The city calls these particular offenders scofflaws.
We believe just slapping another ticket on someone who has 20 tickets, and saying we think they might pay the ticket now because it's the 21st ticket is not a way to do things efficiently.
The controller's office said the Department of Transportation didn't use its license plate recognition equipment, which could have caught repeated ticket offenders. The department's interim general manager, Amir Sadati, said they didn't use it because management decided to shift staff away from enforcing these particular laws. But now he says that will change.
I assure you our traffic officers at LADOT will be out there every day, every month, every year, using the latest technologies in the fight against scofflaws.
Gruhl said it was a goof not to aggressively punish these offenders. Mark Shore, Annenberg Radio News.
L.A. City Councilmember Dennis Zine drew attention today to what he calls faulty business practices at the Department of Water and Power. Zine says some taxpayers have been backbilled by DWP, meaning they end up having to pay more than they owe. Zine requested that City Controller Wendy Gruhl look into the way the utility company bills and collects from its customers. He urged customers who feel they have paid more than they should to come forward. The head librarian of the LA Public Library System told the City Council today he is against installing filters on public computers to block pornography. City librarian Martin Gomez says blocking access to certain content is a slippery slope. An incident at the Chinatown Public Library in December prompted the City Council to look into its legal options. A California Assembly Committee today approved a bill that will allow local governments to opt out of the Secure Communities Program. That federal program is designed to report undocumented immigrants who have broken the law. Democrat Assemblyman Tom Amiano of San Francisco has sponsored a bill that would let local communities decide if they want to take part in the program. It's called the Transparency and Responsibility Using State Tools Act, or TRUST. Flor Rodriguez is with an organization that represents day laborers, many of whom are undocumented. She says the Secure Communities program has created tension between communities and the police. She thinks the trust bill will help.
So what this bill would do is will bring the confidence back. It will give us the option, give the cities the option to be a part of Secure Communities or not, right? So I think this is something that the city of LA as well as other cities will need because it would only make us have a secure community.
The State Sheriff's Association opposes the bill. The group says the Securities Communities program saves money because it automatically checks the immigration status of people who are arrested. The LA County Board of Supervisors today approved a fee hike at county museums. The cost of admission for the Natural History Museum will increase by $4 and by $5 at the Page Museum. $12 is what you'll need to get into both museums, but visitors will need to fork over a bit more for parking. School groups can still visit for free as long as they make advance reservations. Councilmember Bernard Parks and the Superintendent of Parks and Recreation broke ground today on a new state park in South LA. Britt Thorson has more on the construction at the Jackie Tatum Harvard Recreation Center.
The Jackie Tatum Harvard Recreation Center has seen a lot of improvements recently. A brand new swimming pool, repainted tennis courts, and even an aerobics class. But Councilmember Bernard Parks said there was one thing the community youth kept asking for, a skate park.
And this is something that has been long awaited by the community. The young kids have asked at every park, can they have a skate park? And the problem is we can't put one at every park.
The skate park will take about 3 months to build, and word is quickly spreading.
We've already, like I said, already begun to direct kids at other parks so they will understand when this opens, they're welcome no matter what their neighborhood is.
Parks believes the importance of fully serviced parks are more critical than ever right now.
One of the things, particularly in these down economic times, people are constantly looking for something that they can go to without costing them money. Here, the community relies on free city services.
Even after the skate park is complete, the upgrade on the Jackie Tatum Rec Center is not over. Neil Drucker is with the Bureau of Engineering.
Once the skate park is done, the next thing you'll see, and it'll probably start construction in the fall, is a series of outdoor improvements. We're going to be improving the sports fields, a walking path throughout the park, walking jogging paths, some exercise stations. So this park will be very, very beautiful and serve the entire community.
The skate park is set to be open for use early August. Britt Thorson, Annenberg Radio News.
This week, summer weather has rolled in to tempt us just before classes end for the semester. Tonight, clear and breezy. Tomorrow and Thursday will be sunny with highs in the mid-70s near the beach and upper 80s inland. So take those books outdoors to study, if you can. Later on Annenberg Radio News, we hear the story behind the story of a popular children's book. The city of LA has two professional basketball teams, two hockey teams, and two baseball teams. Whitney Blaine was at USC's Heritage Hall today, where she learned the city also has a rivalry between two track teams.
Angela Williams isn't a household name. If you spotted her 5'2" frame holding her newborn on an ordinary day, you'd never guess she had a legacy. But today she became a member of the Dual Meet Hall of Fame, which honors the best track and field stars from UCLA and USC. And as she walked into USC's storied Heritage Hall to be inducted, you could see the Olympian emerge.
This award, it instills in me that I was appreciated. All the hard work that I did while I was here and the things I accomplished, just more and more comes later. You know, and you don't think at that moment when you're doing what you're doing that there's more to come.
Williams has also been inducted into USC's overall Hall of Fame. But she said the Dual Meet Hall of Fame is different, because the event meant so much to her in college.
You get this boost, you know? It's almost as though I had that same feeling like when I was at the Olympics or something. You get this feeling of, I know the importance.
Being here, felt like the Olympics?
You had a lot of pressure on you.
You have two major universities that's in one city going at it.
Kevin Craddock is a UCLA alum and a professional runner who attended the ceremony.
There's no other rivalry like the USC-UCLA rivalry. Between the two schools, there are many, many Olympians and many, many medals.
UCLA's female track and field program hasn't existed as long as the Trojans, but the Bruin women still lead the dual meet series, while the Trojan men have the edge over UCLA. Sam Nicholson was a member of the Trojan track team in the 1950s. Today, he had the honor of introducing the inductees.
Well, to be a member of any kind of Hall of Fame, either at USC or UCLA, means you have to be one of the best in the world, because that's the type of athletes that both schools have had.
Track and field might not have the same visibility as other sports, but to the Olympians and Hall of Famers who came out of USC and UCLA, the rivalry is just as strong. Whitney Blaine, Annenberg Radio News.
This weekend, the LA Times Festival of Books will take place in its new location at USC. One of the booths that will be there has been at the event every year since it began. And as Tanner Keith reports, the author has a special tie to USC.
The LA Times Festival of Books is opening a new chapter at USC.
For the first time in 15 years, the event is switching locations. And the change of location brings one of the authors a little closer to home. The late David Saltzman, son of USC professor Joe Saltzman, will have his best-selling book, The Jester Has Lost His Jingle, featured at the event. His mother, Barbara Saltzman, says the book has an inspiring message.
The book is a wonderful, joyful, happy story about laughter and how it's always inside us, no matter what is going on in our lives.
David wrote and illustrated the book his senior year at Yale while fighting Hodgkin's disease. Before he passed away, his family promised him his book would be published.
He was completing the book knowing that he might not survive, and he maintained his optimism and his sense of humor and laughter throughout that process, and any child who reads the book immediately grasps the message of joy that is contained within it.
The Saltzmans have continued to honor their son's memory by starting the Jester and Farley Fund. It's a nonprofit dedicated to both helping ill children and encouraging a love for reading among students nationwide.
The Jester tells Farley, it's up to us to make a difference. It's up to us to care. And we have taken that as the motto of the Jester and Farley Fund. And that is what inspires children.
More than 150,000 books through the foundation have been given to hospitals, shelters, underserved schools, and other special needs facilities.
Children have read more than 26 million pages in 10 years to help other children.
This Saturday, the Jester and Farley Fund will have their own booth at the festival. And for each book that is sold, the foundation will donate a book to a child in the hospital. Tanner Keith, Annenberg Radio News.
19 years ago this week, the Los Angeles riots broke out in the heart of South LA. Buildings directly across the street from USC's campus went up in flames from the violence. Gladys Castaneda has been a server at the University Club at USC for over 27 years. She was in the neighborhood when the riots began in April 1992. I visited her at work today to hear about her memories of that time.
During the time of the LA riots in 1992, you were a server here. Mm-hmm. So tell me what you remember from that time.
I received a phone call from this job telling me that don't show up to work because it was, you know, fire in the whole cities. So it was scary, but anyway, I just came and...
So they told you not to come and you came anyway?
Yeah, I came anyway. So, but anyway, I was maybe like a two blocks from my house. I was living here on the 11th Street and Union. And I just went back to home because I was so scared, you know?
What kinds of things did you see?
Fire and a lot of shopping centers, you know, and on the streets. I remember cars were, you know, on fire too. So,
did you see any violence while you were walking to work?
Yes, I saw a lot of people breaking windows and, you know, and getting to the business and stealing things, you know. So it was kind of scary for me. So I that's why I went back to my home and stayed there and, you know, closed doors and everything. So it was kind of terrible. I can't remember things before or after that. It was something really, really big.
Was anyone that you knew personally harmed from the riots?
No, thank God. Nothing happened to my close family or friends, but I knew it was a lot of people get injury because of that, yeah.
Living in the South Central neighborhood, you hadn't experienced any racial tension or class tension prior to the riots breaking out?
No, after that, not. No, not really.
So not afterwards, but before?
Before, it was kind of tense, you know, we had to watch the time that you're working on the street, but not at this time now. It's more, you know, nice and quiet, yeah, neighborhood.
Did you feel safer because you worked at the university, and did things seem fairly calm before or after the riots?
Oh, yes, I feel very secure working here at the university because there's a lot of secure, there's a lot of police around, and, you know, and the neighborhood is nice neighborhood, so I feel safe.
Gladys Castaneda is a resident of South LA and a server at the University Club. The Census Bureau's new figures shows that Latinos outnumber any other ethnic group in Compton. In the last century, the city has gone from majority white to majority black, and now to mostly Latino population. Jessica Flores talked to a historian who's taking a unique look at the city.
When Stanford professor Alec Amarillo asks people, "What do you know about Compton?" he says he usually gets this response.
It's a black ghetto, gangster rap, the Crips and the Blood, and a whole bunch of murder. And all right, well, those were our realities, but they are not the reality.
For the past few years, Camarillo has been writing a book about the city. He wants to cut through the stereotypes and reveal a complex community grappling with racial divides, but also one with very real hopes. And he's starting with his family. His father moved to Compton in 1914, and Camarillo grew up in a Mexican-American barrio there.
By the time I'm in middle school, the realtors are trying to make their last stand, saying African-Americans are not going to be allowed to cross the Alameda Corridor. And, of course, that didn't work after 1965 when the Watts riot kind of blew the lid off.
While growing up in the 50s and 60s, he made friends with both black and white kids in the neighborhood. So at the time of school integration, administrators at Camarillo's high school called him to mediate racial tension, a move he said didn't actually work.
And there was enormous reaction to the black kids coming on. There's fights and there's things, you know, graffiti written on walls saying, "Go back to the west side." I mean, it was really bad.
And while blacks are still heavily in the community, Latinos are now the majority ethnic group. For Camarillo's new book, he gathered about 100 oral histories from Compton residents to understand how it has changed since he left 30 years ago. And older black residents' view of the city didn't mirror popular cultures.
And to break into a formerly white community was an enormous achievement. So they speak almost like Nirvana. Compton is Nirvana. And if you have to appreciate the nature of the oppression, the racial oppression that blacks suffered and those communities like Compton and Linwood and others that absolutely kept them out, you can understand those comments.
When he interviewed immigrant Latinos, Camarillo found they also moved to the city for a chance to buy an affordable home and build a family.
The reality of Compton, that there's a bunch of it's populated by African-American, Latino people, families that are trying to make the best of what they have. Hardworking folks, for the most part, that are poor, for the most part, working class, for the most part, and trying to make life livable. That's a fundamental human experience for people in Compton, whether it's 60 years ago, 100 years ago, or today.
Camarillo's book is tentatively titled Going Back to Compton, Reflections of a Native Son on an Infamous City.
Now we check in with Caroline Vandegrift to see what's coming up on Annenberg TV News at 6 p.m. on Trojan Vision. Caroline?
Thanks, Sarah. Well, it's Brit Week here in L.A. They're celebrating across the pond, but we have the scoop on how Angelenos are celebrating here. Also, a new study came out about the increase in texting while driving. We'll have all the details tonight at 6 p.m. or check us out on the web at atvn.org.
Thanks, Caroline, and congrats on graduating. That's it. That's it for this Tuesday and for this semester. Thanks to our Tuesday staff, Whitney Blaine, Travis Cochran, Julia Dang, Trenise Ferreira, Stephanie Guzman, Tanner Keith, Mark Shore, Britt Thorsen, Liz Warden, Candace Winters, and Carl Nikodik. Chris Foy is our producer. Jessica Flores is the executive producer. Billy Higgins is our technical guru. Couldn't do it without him. And we'll be off over the summer, but you can check out our stories on the website. We'll see you all again in the fall. For all of us here at Annenberg Radio News, I'm Sarah Erickson. We'll be right back.